Blog Talk Radio. Radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
What is your dating intelligence quotient? Or in other words, what is your dating IQ? Do you make the same dating and relationship mistakes over and over and over again and have no clue why? Or do you quickly learn from your mistakes and allow yourself to gain more and more wisdom from each and every dating and relationship you experience? Which sex is the most nitpicky when it comes to what they want from the opposite gender? Which sex is the most superficial? Which sex has a harder time handling a breakup? My guest for the evening has written an entertaining and informative book for both genders that enlightens readers to what they need to know and should know in order to navigate their way through the many obstacles presented by today's ever-so-challenging dating scene. Who is this man who appears to be somewhat of a know-it-all when it comes to dropping knowledge and wisdom on the many singles out here in society looking for Mr. Right or Miss Right? His name is Steve Penner, and tonight Mr. Penner is going to provide my listeners with some interesting tidbits and morsels of wisdom as he decides to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my god, is this the Alan Roger Curry of Mode 1 fame? Oh my god,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and bury someone in a race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life. You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman, but the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, mode one. This is Gerard McClendon from Chicago Tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode one, let the women know, fellas, what you're really thinking. Ha ha, Alan Roger Curry.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Alan Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, June 10th, and tonight we're going to discuss the concept of a man or woman's dating IQ, or DQ for short. How intelligent do you think you are in regards to dating and relationships? Do you consider yourself wise, kind of a seasoned veteran when it comes to interacting with members of the opposite sex? Or do you consider yourself kind of ignorant and behind the eighth ball? We shall see. Next week, I will be celebrating my three-year anniversary on Blog Talk Radio, my three-year anniversary. I got started on Blog Talk Radio actually in late May of 2007. The first incarnation of my show was actually called Balls Out Talk with Mode One. It wasn't called Upfront and Straightforward. It was called Balls Out Talk with Mode One. And then about 3.5-4 weeks later, I changed it to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. And I've been on the Blog Talk Radio Network roughly about 3 years, a little over 3 years, and I'll be celebrating that next week. And then the following week, I will have outspoken women's empowerment coach, Alexis K. Tyler. Alexis K. Tyler. Yes. Oh, Ms. Driven said, I'm glad you changed the name. Hey, I like that name, Balls Out Talk, because that's what it was about, Balls Out Talk. And but yeah, the powers that be at Blog Talk Radio suggested that I change my title to a more tame name, and so I did. Chat room, I think everybody is watching the NBA Finals because my chat room is one of the most empty I've ever seen it. I only got about like 8 people in the chat room, but hey, I still love you guys anyway. I got Miss Driven. She already talking smack. And I got my most loyal listener like ever in the history of life, Hypert. Hypert. Hypert is my most loyal listener ever. Gotta love Hypert. He's always here. More special shout outs would be my beautiful and talented girlfriend,
Tyler Collins, my brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry, my cousin, Jason P. Jones from Chicago, my other cousin from Maplewood, New Jersey, Arthur Ball, Christopher Curry, my other cousin from Detroit, Philip Pulliam and his older brother, Irvin V. Pulliam III, EVP3, who's actually in town for a visit. He's in Northwest Indiana, Chicagoland area right now visiting. Nohad, a.k.a. Metal Hayes, Vanessa Turner, Edith Edie Lee Harris, Steve Dedeen Williams, Will Wavy Mill Hopkins, Kathy Holloway Hill, Chad Hunter, all my Facebook friends, my fellow Blog Talk Radio colleagues, much love to you. As I mentioned, NBA Finals are going on. NBA Finals are going on. So if you're an NBA fan, you know it's halftime of Game 4. Halftime of Game 4. And right now, the Lakers. How many of you out there love the Lakers? It's halftime. Lakers up by 3 points, 45-42 over the Boston Celtics. 45-42 over the Boston Celtics. So if the Lakers win, they will go up 3-1. They will go up 3-1. And if the Celtics are able to pull out the victory, then the series will be tied 2-2. So we shall see. I see Scholar2414's in my chat room. He's joining me. And, yeah, not Ignorant2414, not Dummy2414, but Scholar2414. Congratulations to the Chicago Blackhawks. They are the Stanley Cup champs. That's right. The Chicago Blackhawks, Stanley Cup champs. They won the NHL title last night. You know, I don't really watch hockey. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't really watch hockey. But I was all into that game last night. That was a good game. It went into overtime. The Chicago Blackhawks ended their 49-year drought. And they won the Stanley Cup. And congratulations to them. I'm proud of them, as is everybody from the Chicago area. Now, you know there's a big mess in the Gulf. They still got this oil spill. And the oil spill, I think it's starting to get to our president. Our president got a little testy the other day. He got a little testy the other day when talking about the oil spill. I don't know. Here's what he said on the NBC Today show.
I was down there a month ago before most of these talking heads were even paying attention to the Gulf. A month ago, I was meeting with fishermen down there, standing in the rain, talking about what a potential crisis this could be. And I don't sit around just talking to experts because this is a college seminar. We talk to these folks because they potentially have the best answers, so I know who's asked to kick.
He said, so I know who's asked to kick. Man. See, look what y'all done did to Obama. Look what y'all did to President Obama. He's so frustrated. He's talking about kicking somebody's ass. I'm assuming he's talking about the powers that be with BP. He wanted to kick their ass. He's so mad about this oil. That oil spill is really sad. Like Ms. Driven said in chat room, it's just sad. I've seen the effect it's had on the wildlife. It just saddens me. It really does. And it's just really a damn shame that such a travesty has happened. I read that Angelina Jolie is going to play Cleopatra. Interesting choice. Interesting choice. We'll see how that pans out. Now, you know, Will Smith's son got a movie coming out this weekend, A Karate Kid. Karate Kid. And, you know, he gets bullied by some fellow, you know, kids. And, you know, I happen to know that Obama's a movie fan. So I asked him what his thoughts were about the movie, The Karate Kid, and the whole subject of bullying. And he was quite angry about the whole idea of Will Smith's son being bullied in that movie. And when I asked him what were his thoughts on these bullies, this is what he had to say.
We talked to these folks, so I know who's asked to kick.
Yep, see, he wants to kick some ass. I mean, he's mad. He's mad over the spill. He's mad over these bullies and the Karate Kid. Hey, Obama is on a mission. Yep, Ms. Driven said something in the chat room that has been often debated. Was Cleopatra black? Was Cleopatra black? Of course, most African Americans believe she was. She was Egyptian. They say she was black. Some people say she was Greek. Some people say she was Arab. Some people say she was none of those. It's been a debate. Now, you know Angelina Jolie actually played a role already in a movie that was based on a story that was about a black woman. They chose her. So I guess, you know, Angelina Jolie is just like you just insert her in any role, regardless of if the real life person was black, Asian, Hispanic, whatever. You know, I love Angelina Jolie, so there's no disrespect against her. She's a talented woman, but who's ever doing the casting, interesting choices. I'm going to take a quick intermission break. And when I get back, I will introduce my guests, and we'll be ready to get this discussion started. So don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Leila Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Scores Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Alan.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Alan.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lines, and or sex lines. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network.
My guest for the evening is a veteran of the dating and relationships arena. He was a founder of a singles organization in the Boston area known as Lunch Dates, where he spent two decades getting into the minds of single men and single women, as they offered feedback about their challenges, disappointments, and frustrations related to finding Mr. Right or Miss Right. He is currently a newspaper columnist for Seacoast New Hampshire Media Group, and he leads relationship workshops in the general New England and New Hampshire region, and has been interviewed in a number of media publications, radio programs, television programs. On behalf of Upfront and Straightforward and the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network, listeners, give it up for Mr. Steve Penner. How you doing there, Steve?
I'm doing great. Boy, great introduction. Got a
oh,
big crowd
welcome.
There.
You're welcome. You deserve it. My first question to you right off the bat is, are you in litigation with Dairy Queen? Because you sold their letters, DQ. And I'm just wondering if Dairy Queen is suing you.
Well, they haven't come after me yet, so don't tell anybody. Yes.
Okay. Dating quotient. Now, that's kind of heavy duty. I got a couple emails about that. What exactly is a man or woman's dating quotient?
It's basically a measure of how marketable they are in the singles area. In the singles, arena, a person. I like to use the analogy, with real estate. It's kind of like how much of a mortgage you can afford when you go to buy a house, and it's the same thing. A dating quotient basically is based upon how realistic, how easy or hard it is to match somebody up, and how easy or hard it is to match somebody up isn't just an indication of how tall they are, how good looking they are, how rich they are. But it's also an indication whether who they are and what they're looking for is a good match. And a lot of people are single and will always be single and have trouble meeting someone because who they are and what they're looking for just isn't a good match.
Wow, that's strong words to say that some people will always be single.
Well, unless they wise up, unless they learn how to, the book I wrote is how to realize and raise your dating quotient. And one thing I tried to do when I ran the dating service Lunch Dates for 23 years is to educate people. I didn't just BS people. I didn't yes everybody to death. When they came in and said, I'm 55 years old and I want to meet a 25-year-old beautiful woman, I said, hey, that doesn't jive. The 25-year-old beautiful woman doesn't want you at 55. And then they'd say, well, what kind of woman can I be matched with, and then I would tell them based on who they are and what they're looking for. Again, using a real estate analogy, you walk into a real estate agency and you say, I want to look at a $3 million home, overlooking with a great view of the ocean. And the first thing they're going to say is, great, we have homes like that. But, how much money do you make? How much do you have in the bank? What kind of mortgage can you afford? And if you only make, $25,000 a year, and have, $10,000 saved up, they're going to say, we can't show you a $3 million home. We can show you a nice little cottage, a nice little bungalow. Maybe that's what you can afford. And I think a lot of people make the mistake when they're single of just being unrealistic in terms of the type of person they want to meet.
Mm-hmm. Real quickly, I want to give some shout-outs to new participants in my chat room, Blessed Angel Eyes. Is in my chat room, Glendon Glenda, a good Facebook friend, is in my chat room. Self-Guided is in my chat room. Giselle Chat is in my chat room, as well as a number of guests. What made you first, Steve, become fascinated with the ins and outs of dating and relationships?
Well, I got divorced. You know, I had married somebody that I had met in college, like a lot of people, was, you know, married for about 7 or 8 years, got divorced, and suddenly I found myself in my early 30s and single, and I had no idea what to do. I had no idea how to meet people. If you had told me that someday I'd write a book and be a dating coach and teach workshops, I would have just laughed at you. So anyway, there I was, single and in my mid-30s, and what I did was, believe it or not, I started a Scrabble club in Boston.
Scrabble club, huh?
Yeah, I'd like to play Scrabble. I was looking for something to do at night, and I started a Scrabble club, and to my surprise, we used to get anywhere from 70 to 100 people would show up to play Scrabble. And
wow.
I started asking people, why are you here? It turned out, as I talked to people, that about 90% of them were single or divorced and were looking to meet somebody. And I realized, hey, you know, maybe there's a market for something like this. We actually did have 3 couples meet at the Scrabble Club and get married. you know, it was 1982, and the disco era was dying, and there really weren't many dating services out there. And I came up with the idea of lunch dates, and I started it. Originally, it was just a telephone in my living room, you know, matching up single people to meet for lunch or drinks after work or dinner in a nice restaurant. And it just took off. I was actually surprised. It just took off. It was like lighting a match to kerosene. And over the course of the next couple of years, we had scores, then hundreds, then thousands of people join. And I opened up 5 offices in the Boston area. And that's how I got into it. And then I started interviewing people the first few years, and I began to see certain patterns. You know, I began to see how different men and women were. And, you know, men would say the same things they were looking for. Women would say the same things we were looking for. And I started to see how unrealistic so many men and women are. So that's when I started, mid-80s is when I started teaching workshops. And over 23 years, I, you know, interviewed we had over 25,000 people join lunch dates. I probably interviewed over 10,000 of those people directly and listened to feedback from the other 15,000. And I've seen people write books after interviewing, you know, 300 people. Well, I interviewed 10,000 people. So a few years ago, I decided I sold lunch dates, and that's when I said, okay, now I'm going to tell the truth about dating, pass it on to people, and I started writing this newspaper column. And I do a lot of coaching of singles over the internet, too, or in person, and I teach workshops, and I do radio shows.
Okay.
Trying to pass on what I learned.
Hey, I congratulate you for doing so. Let me ask a question about the fairer gender women. What do, in your opinion, based on your conversations with women, what do women really want from men?
Right. Well, first of all, I will say men have no idea what women want, and women have no idea what men want. And that's why there's a lot of people have a real problem. The number one thing, you know, we start when someone would join lunch dates, we would do an hour long interview, and the last question of the interview was, okay, forget everything you said to me. What are the 3 most important things you're looking for? And over the years, without a doubt, what do you think the number one thing was they would say? I'm gonna ask you as a man. What do you think the number one thing women would ask for?
As far as the characteristic or attribute?
Yeah, yeah. Whether it was appearance or height or money or a good job or a man with education or personality.
I would say sense of humor.
That's right. You got it. Very good. Very
really?
Good, Alan. Because most men, 9 out of 10 men I ask that question to always say, oh, they want guys who make a lot of money or, you know, they want someone who's really good looking. No, number one is sense of humor. Absolutely. Women complain that, especially on dates, women complain that one of the common complaints women make is that men are too serious, that they're trying too hard to impress them. They want a guy who's relaxed, down to earth, casual, and funny. Not, you know, doesn't have to come in telling jokes, but someone who doesn't take themselves too seriously. So the number one thing women are looking for is sense of humor. The number two thing, I think, is honesty. You know, a lot of guys cheat. A lot of guys bullshit women, if I'm allowed to say that.
Okay.
And honesty is probably the number two thing. Number three is probably just a really down-to-earth, nice guy. What I always hear women say is, I want a guy who's comfortable in his own skin. And then comes appearance, you know, and then comes, you know, what he does for work or that he makes a decent living, that type of thing. But the top three things tend to be sense of humor, a sense of confidence, a nice guy, down-to-earth, and an honest guy.
Now, it's funny because if you had asked me a few months ago, I don't know if I would have gave that same answer, but I was just in I have a girlfriend in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to some of her friends, and we were talking about, you know, what characteristics attract you. And I just knew, because all of them were very attractive, and, you know, I just knew, like, career success or financial success was going to be the number one thing they were looking for. But similar to what you just described, I think, you know, career success, financial success was maybe number three, number four on their list. But
that's
number
right.
one, they all said, was sense of humor.
That's
they
right.
They said they cannot okay. date a guy long-term that's just too serious or too boring.
Yeah, boring is another thing that women complain about, that guys are boring, you know, that they're not interesting. And, you know, one of the problems is when men and women go on a, you know, we called our service lunch dates, and we had people meet over lunch or, you know, or dinner, but the point is they met in a restaurant over, you know, and they would meet and talk. And what's interesting is a real common complaint from women is that the men were boring, that the men were too serious. And part of the problem is, and if you really think about this closely, it's interesting. Women have a lot of friends that they go to lunch with, that they have drinks with, that they go to dinner with. You know, watch Sex and the City. All their conversations are over a meal. So women are used to sitting around a restaurant and talking and laughing with one another. Men aren't used to it. Men don't do that. Men don't go out for dinner with their friend, with their male friends. They'll go out to a sports bar and watch a game, you know, and get drunk together, or they'll go out together to meet women. But one guy doesn't call up his male friend and say, let's go to dinner together. And it just doesn't happen, and you know, unless there's a game on. So what happens is guys really aren't used to just chit-chatting and hanging out over a meal. So when a guy finally, you know, goes on a date, he just tries too hard. And I always say, if there's one thing I could try and open up the brain of men and instill this one thought, is stop trying so hard. What's really interesting is that the women who complain the most about men tend to be very good-looking women.
Really?
Because very good-looking women, now I'm talking about, they would complain about men's personalities. Often what a guy does, he meets a woman, right? Say he's very attracted to her. So what does he do? He tries to impress her. And he immediately tells her, you know, how successful he is, and he tells all his stories and his little anecdotes and what kind of car he drives and all that. And she sits there going, what would happen after a lot of dates that we arranged, the men would then call and say, oh, what a fantastic date. She was just terrific. You know, I really found her attractive. And then the woman would call and say he was the biggest idiot she ever met. She never wants to see him again. What men need to do, what I tell men is, if you're going on a date and you meet somebody and you find her attractive, the most important thing is stop trying to impress her, but show an interest in her. Ask her questions. Show an interest in her, and then you can bring the conversation back to yourself. And the guys who do that, I give this advice to men all the time. They always report back, wow, you were right. It was so easy. Guys, you know, guys who have trouble on dates, it was so easy. Just ask her about what she does for work or what her hobbies or interests are. Or if she says she likes to travel, you know, where has she been? And then she'll call and say, God, he was such a great conversationalist.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I want to real quickly acknowledge some New people in my chat room, Gerald Runnels Show is in my chat room. Who else? James365 is in my chat room.
So they're pouring in, huh?
Yeah, they flowing in. And I saw Nikki Love. She must have stepped out. But, man, that's interesting. Yeah, I agree. I talk about that. I have a book of my own. I don't know if you know. It's called Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking.
Uh-huh.
And I talk about the guys you just described, the type of guy that approaches women, immediately tries to impress them, talking about the type of car they drive. And I found, I know from my own conversations, women get bored with that real quick.
Right.
That turns them off. Now, I'm going to ask you a couple questions about kind of gender versus gender questions. Which gender would you say is the most superficial, and which gender would you say is the most nitpicky?
Well, obviously women are the most nitpicky, and men are probably the most superficial. I mean, you know, if you ask me what is it that men are looking for, without a doubt, the number one thing is appearance. I mean, that's just the way men are constructed. And they're looking for physical appearance is the most important thing. However, you can differentiate. Not all men are that superficial. All men are that shallow. And one thing I differentiate is men who have been married before and are divorced or widowed, and men who have never been married before. Because men who have never been married, definitely the number one thing, and men of all ages who have never been married, definitely appearance is the most important thing to them. But men who have been divorced, who are the more experienced in terms of relationships, they learned their lesson because they married that hot babe who, you know, they ultimately wound up being divorced from. So you talk to a guy who has been married before, hopefully he's learned his lesson. And what he'll ask for will not be physical. I mean, he doesn't want a woman who repulses him, obviously.
Yeah.
But I think he's learned that, you know, what's really important in a relationship. So you show me a guy, for example, who was married to a woman and got divorced because, you know, maybe she's a shopaholic. His number one criteria is, I don't want to meet a shopaholic. You know, if he's was married to a woman who cheated on him, then he'll say, I don't want a woman who cheats. If he is married to a woman who just, you know, spends all her time yakking with her friends or something, he'll say, I want a woman who doesn't spend all her time yakking with her friends. But so men who are divorced are tend to be a lot more sensitive, not quite as superficial as the never married men. And the worst men, to be honest, are the older never married men, the confirmed bachelors, so to speak, in their 40s and 50s who haven't been married. Those are the guys who really tend to be the most superficial and will say, okay, here's my requirements. She has to have blonde hair. She has to have blue eyes. She has to be. I actually had guys come in and give me their height and weight charts.
Wow.
You know, if she's 5'6", she has to be 125, no more than that, and you know, things like that. And those would be the never married older guys.
Interesting. Now, what do you think is the worst thing that can happen if either a man or a woman in a fairly new relationship says, I love you too quickly?
Well, that's, you know, basically that'll happen. Men will tend to do that because, again, if a man puts his emphasis on physical appearance, then he meets a really attractive woman and, you know, she's got an okay personality. On the second date, he's going to tell her he loves her, which is just a huge mistake. At my dating service, you know, If someone started dating somebody, or for any reason they could put their membership on hold, and I can't tell you how many times a man would call after one or two or three dates with somebody and said, "Put my membership on hold because you know this woman's great and I love her and you know I know I'm going to marry her and this type of thing and put my membership on hold," and then inevitably you know a week later he'd call and say, "Take my membership off hold. You know, she doesn't want to go out with me." And generally what happened is he came on too strong too soon. Again, very attractive women say that all the time. You know, if you're a very attractive woman in our society, you've probably been that way since you were about 14 and had guys, you know, hitting on you. So now a woman's 25 or 30 and guys are still giving her that BS line after a couple, one or two or three dates. You know, you're terrific. You're the love of my life, and they just don't buy it. And you know, so that's the mistake that guys come on too strong, using the L word too soon. Now, what's interesting, what happens often, though, in many relationships, let's say the guy says that and the woman's smart enough to say, well, wait a second, Alan, let's wait a little, you know, let's get to know each other better before you say that. So they start dating and they go out for about 6 months. And then the woman says to the guy, hey, now that I've gotten to know you, Alan, I realize you're a great guy. I think I love you. And then what happens? He runs. Because often what happens, and women will always, you know, agree with me on this, how many guys run after, you know, that 4 to 6 month period? And the reason is because that initial infatuation felt, you know, faded away. That whole infatuation period, no matter how good looking a woman is, it's going to fade away. You know, it may not end in 4 to 6 months, and it may end in a year, it may end in 2 years, it may end in 5 years after they're married and have had two kids. But guys who marry women just because they find them very attractive, or are in a relationship just because they find them very attractive, after a while that infatuation wears off, and sometimes they see the real woman, and maybe the real woman doesn't have the other characteristics that they're looking for. They're not really a good match. I hate the term love at first sight, because love at first sight is something that movies and television writers have you know, and songwriters, you know, some enchanted evening, you will see that woman across the room, and you see that in movies all the time. You know, two people see each other and they lock eyes, and you just know that they're going to have this great relationship, this great love story. And people see that, watch these movies, watch these television shows, you know, listen to these songs, and they set up their own little fantasies. And so when they fall for that fantasy, and they meet someone they're really attractive to, and they think this is love, and all of a sudden, you know, a few years later, they wake up and they realize, how did I ever marry this woman?
Interesting.
So I think I always say, you know, it's like, again, if you're going to buy a car, you don't just buy a car because you like the color blue and you like the, you know, there's stereo speakers in the car. You buy the car, you have to look what's in the engine. And unfortunately, not enough guys do that and you know, kick the tires and look under the hood. Too many guys just see a woman and they're, you know, bowled away, they're knocked off their feet, and they say, wow, we have such great chemistry, and this is the woman I'm going to marry. And that's why so many marriages end in divorce. I mean, 50% of marriages end in divorce, if you think about it. And that's why people just make too premature of a decision about what they're looking for.
Now, I'm sure you saw the movie When Harry Met Sally.
I love that movie, yes.
And that movie basically asked the question, can a single man and a single woman maintain a platonic friendship indefinitely? What's Steve Penner's thoughts on that?
Well, I agree totally with Billy Crystal's character said in the movie. Not really. They can't unless he's totally not attracted to her and she's totally not attracted to him. And even then, he says, but even then, you know, the guy will still want to sleep with her. But, you know, it's impossible. It really is impossible. They may be friends for a while. But ultimately, eventually, the guy's going to want more than that. I have a daughter in her early 20s, very attractive. She's had a lot of male friends. And I keep warning her that these guys who say they just want to be friends ultimately are looking for more than friendship. And ultimately, she's really lost some very good friends, because after a few months, they say to her, they admit that they want to be more than friends. And then when she says, well, I only want to be friends with you, I thought we were just friends, then their friendship ends. And she's been hurt by that. So I agree totally with that movie. You can't just be friends. The interesting thing, though, you could start off as friends, and that's what happened in Harry Met Sally, and that friendship can grow into something more. But it'll either grow into something or it'll have to end. There's no way that a man and woman can just be friends over a long period of time. Again, unless there's absolutely no physical attraction between the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And women will say, you know, another difference between men and women, women will say, well, you know, when I first met Harry, I wasn't that attracted to him. But after once I got to know him, yeah, he grew on me, and then I became attracted to him. Men never say that, or rarely say that. Does a man say, yeah, I wasn't attracted to her at the beginning, but after a while, she grew on me, I became attracted to her. That's a real difference between men and women. It doesn't happen, rarely, or I shouldn't say 100% it doesn't happen, but rarely does that happen.
Well, speaking of difference between men and women, what would you say, generally speaking, you've already, I guess, kind of highlighted some things, but if you were examining men's overall perspective on dating and relationship and women's overall perspective on dating and relationship, and as you have a chapter section in your book comparing men and women's brains, what are two or three differences between how men look at dating relationships and how women look at dating relationships?
Well, I think relationships, I like to use the phrase, and you'll enjoy this one, I like to use the phrase that what relationships are to women is what sports are to men. You know, that women really get into relationships. I mean, they go on a date, and then they come home, and then they call their sister or their girlfriend, and then they analyze it, and you know, just like a post-game analysis. They talk about the date. They really get into relationships. They really get into, while they're dating somebody, they're still going to be talking to a friend, to their friends, you know, and saying, yeah, you know, how's it going? You know, it's going pretty well with Jim, it's not going well, or he doesn't talk to me anymore, or whatever. And they sort of do this constant analysis of relationships. And men tend not to do that. You know, when I was single, for example, I was single for 8 years between marriages, and when I would talk to my male friends, they never wanted to hear me talk. They wanted to know if I slept with the woman I was dating or how was the sex. But if I said, you know, I'm not getting along with this woman real well, you know, and I think I need to, I'm not sure what to do about it, their eyes would just glaze over. I remember talking to one friend on the phone, and I was saying, you know, I'm not sure about my relationship with so-and-so. And you know what he did? He said, you know, he admitted, he said, Steve, I don't really care that much. Let me put my wife on the phone because she's always asking me how you're doing. You know, she's the one who's interested in it. So I think, and how that, you know, how that moves on in terms of relationships is that women in a couple in a relationship, the woman is always analyzing the relationship. And the men just kind of takes it for granted and just is somewhat oblivious to what's really going on in the relationship. So how many relationships, how many times have wives and husbands or boyfriends and girlfriends, has this happened where the woman says, you know, what's wrong with our relationship? And he'll say, I don't know, nothing. I don't think there's anything wrong. She'll say, well, you don't talk much to me or you seem to be going out a lot or, you know, let's really have a state of the relationship talk. And that's the last thing guys usually want to hear. So guys really... I say for a lot of women, relationship is an end in itself. For a lot of men, it's just a means to an end. Men tend to compartmentalize their life. So their job is important to them. You know, the Lakers or the Celtics is important to them, or their favorite team is important to them. Their hobbies are important to them, and their relationship is important to them. But it's just one aspect of it. And if the relationship isn't doing well, men can just close down that compartment of their life and decide to focus on their job or the Lakers or, you know, whatever, or another aspect of their lives. With a woman, if the relationship isn't going well, it's hard for her to be happy. And I know that may sound sexist to an extent, but it's true. I mean, women, I think, really value relationships more than men do.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, if you want to call in and ask my guest a question or make a comment, the number is 646-478-5710. Again, that's 646-478-5710. I'll be back with more questions for Steve Penner after this brief intermission break. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you
read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, oh, that's
It's only 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay. There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindsets is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So the listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger. Now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that. Yeah.
Oh, man, you got to love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Now return to my interview with relationship columnist and book author Steve Henner on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Welcome back to tonight's episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. I'm speaking this evening with a
relationship columnist, and well-known book author, Steve Penner. Steve Penner, he is the author of The Truth About Dating Revealed, How to Realize and Raise Your Dating Quotient. Your Dating Quotient. And he has interviewed, conversed with over 10, 15,000 different single men, single women. So he knows what he's talking about. And thus far in this show, he's been giving us some great insight and great feedback to my questions. Now, Steve, what do you mean when you say the battle turns in the mid-30s?
I'm glad you brought that up. Well, it's very interesting because this is something that a lot of people don't realize. Women have the edge. And when I say women have the edge, I'm talking about there's more demand because men tend to want to date younger women. Women tend to want to go out with older men. So starting in the teens, really, there's more demand. You know, women are in demand. In the 20s, women are in demand. So women can get away with being very, very picky. In right around the early to mid-30s is when things begin to change. And I'd say in the mid-30s, it's sort of an even battle between men and women. Then starting right around 36 and 37, as you get older, men have the edge. And what I mean is, again, there's more demand for men as you get older in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And so what happens, it does turn in the mid-30s. I always like to think of it, if you compare life to the life cycle to high school, you know, 10th, 11th, and 12th grade. 10th grade girls are in demand because they come into high school in 10th grade, and the 10th grade boys want them, the 11th grade boys want them, the 12th grade boys want them. Nobody wants to go out with the 10th grade boys, right? And then in the 11th grade, it's about even. And then when you get to 12th grade, all of a sudden the boys are in control because they can go out with the 10th grade boys, 10th grade girls, 11th grade girls. And the 12th grade girls think that the boys are too, you know, the boys their own age are too immature, so they want to go out with college guys. So the same thing, if you think of the 20s as the 10th grade and the 30s as the 11th grade and then the 40s and 50s as the 12th grade, that's how the analogy fit. I mean, at lunch dates, it worked perfect. There was a perfect bell-shaped curve of the male-female ratio. And in the 20s, we would get more men than women. In the 30s, we would get an even number of women than men. In the 40s, we would get more women than men. In the 50s, we would get way more women than men. And also part of the problem is, and we haven't really just talked about this at all, but is having children. Women start to hear their biological clock ticking when they get into their early to mid-30s or even late 20s, and they want to really, at that point, settle down. So a lot of women who are overly picky in their 20s, you know, a guy's got to be 6'2", or he's got to be really cute, or he's got to have dimples or whatever, a lot of those women tend to realize what more, you know, they've been burnt by that tall, dark, and handsome a-hole in their 20s. And now they're in, you know, they're in their early mid-30s, and now they're looking for someone they could settle down with who will not only be a husband and a lover, but will be the father of their children. And so in the early 30s, a lot of women say, okay, it's time for me to settle down and get married, and now I'm, you know, I'm ready. For guys don't feel that urge necessarily. Guys don't feel their biological clock ticking really until until they get into the late 30s or even early 40s. So what happens is that there's just more of a demand. The demand for women lessens as you get older. The other interesting thing, and this I think is fascinating, literally, you know, when I would talk to hundreds and thousands of people and I'd say, okay, what's the age range of women or men you want to meet? And people, without even thinking, tend to answer that question with a digit that ends in 5 or 0. So people say, yeah, I want somebody 20 to 30. I want somebody 25 to 35, 30 to 40, 35 to 45. And they don't even think about it. There's a lot of great people out there who are 41 or 46 or that type of thing. Yeah. When it comes to having children, women, and they're right, you know, you can have children well into your 40s. But it is more difficult, and studies have shown that it's more difficult for a woman to get pregnant as she approaches her late 30s and early 40s. But she still can get pregnant. But men don't realize that. Men think that women, a typical man thinks, well, if a woman over 30, if she hits about 35, then if he wants to have a baby, she starts to get too old. And I've talked to a lot of women who are 37, 38, 39, 40, who still want to have children. And the problem is that men who are 37, 38, 39 years old who want to have children don't want to go out with women their own age. For one thing, they don't want to have children right away. You know, if they're on doing an online dating service or something like that, and let's say a guy's 39 and he still wants to have a family, he doesn't want to meet a woman and have a family, you know, 9 months from now. He wants to meet a woman, date her for a year, then maybe get married, and then maybe, you know, have a normal marriage without children for a year, and then maybe start trying to get pregnant. So what a lot of guys do is that figuring that women over 35, for some, they believe can't have kids, they'll work backwards from 35 and say, okay, I want a woman 32. A guy 39 will say this, because I'll meet a woman who's 32, I'll date her for a year, then she's 33. We'll get married when she's 34, and then when at 35, we'll start, you know, try to have children. And women who are 38 or 39 don't want to wait that long. They want to have kids right away. So there's a real, I call it the baby gap. There's a real problem there that men and women have. And a lot of women there's a lot of women out there also who got caught up in the whole career thing and suddenly find themselves 38, 39 and single. And there's a problem there. A woman, it used to be in the old days, and I say the old days, I'm talking about before the women's movement. A woman went to high school or college and basically just wanted to, find a husband and get married right after college. These days, women go to college, and then they decide they want to get their MBAs, or they want to go to law school, or they want to become doctors. And so they go to law school, and now they're 25 and 26, and then they get a job with a firm, and they've got to work 60 hours a week and, you know, to become a partner or whatever to advance in their career. And suddenly they're 29, they're 30, they're 31, 32, 33, 34, they're working so hard, and they're still single. And it's a real problem that there's a lot of never married single women out there in their mid to late 30s who say, you know, I should have thought about this sooner in terms of having a family, because now I'm 38 and I'm having trouble meeting a guy who wants me, you know, and wants to have children with me.
Mm-hmm. Wow. That's
And see, guys can get away with that. Guy could be 45 and say, I still want to have children, but I don't want to meet a woman 45. I want to meet a woman 35. It's so interesting. So many guys, again, that 35 cutoff, so many guys will say to me, a 30-year-old man will say, yeah, I want women 25 to 35. A 35-year-old man will say, I want women 25 to 35. And a 40-year-old man will say, I want women 25 to 35. So things shift as we get into the late 30s. You know, if you ever, Alan, did you watch the show Sex and the City?
Erratically, yeah.
I mean, it's interesting because in that show, when it first came on the air, those women were in their late 20s, and they were very picky about this, that, and the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Then, as they got older, they all kind of settled down a little. I mean, Miranda wound up marrying Steve, even though she's a lawyer and he's a bartender. She wound up marrying him, but she wouldn't have been interested in him when the show first started, when she was like 29, 30 years old.
True.
Same with Charlotte, who wound up marrying the bald, short Jewish guy, who I'm sure when she was 28, 29, when the show first started, she wouldn't have been interested in.
Exactly.
But as she matured and got into her mid-30s, that's what happened. They both settled down. Samantha still is screwing around with everybody and never did, you know. But she never wanted to have children anyway, so.
Yeah. That's really good insight, Steve.
I mean, they actually used the term in one of the early episodes of Sex and the City. They called it the mid 30s power flip, and I copied that phrase in my book. And it's true. There is a mid 30s power flip where all of a sudden women go from having the ball in their court, the ball goes into the man's court. And as you get older, you know, it just gets worse and worse. And all the way up to if you, you know, men tend to die off first. Go to any nursing home and go into the dining room, and you'll see a man holding court surrounded by seven women, all laughing at his attempts at humor. So if guys really want to have a harem of women, just wait till you get to be 85 and go into a nursing home, and you'll be surrounded by women.
Now, what is the granddaddy of double standards?
The granddaddy of double standards is weight. Okay, I mean, I you know, well, there's two. When it comes to appearance, women's worst fear about weight is true. You know, it really is. Men tend to want women. The women don't have to be skinny, but they want women who are fit and in shape and not heavy. And it's something, again, I'm gonna go back to movies and television as being you know, the perpetrator of this myth. Look at any television show, look at any commercial, look at any movie, and sometimes you'll see big fat men dating, you know, are married to slender women. You could think about it started with Jackie Gleason and the Honeymooners, right? Where Alice was slender and Jackie Gleason was fat. And go through, there's so many television shows where the husband is heavy and he's married to a slender woman, a beautiful slender woman. Or just look at so many commercials you'll see. The women, the housewives are always slender and the men often are bigger than them. And it just, in fact, if you really think about it, there's only one sitcom ever where the woman was, the wife was fat, and that was Roseanne, because Roseanne herself was the producer of the show. But even then, John Goodman, her husband, was even bigger than her.
True.
Okay. So men see this, and the other thing is women tend to, I mean, there are very few men who ever come in and say, I want a woman who's really heavy. Okay. Women come in and they want men who are bigger than them, just like they want men who are older than them. Women tend to, there's a real double standard there. Women want men who are bigger than them. I can't tell you how many women said to me, I want a guy whose thighs are bigger than mine. Okay? So heavy men are actually easy to match up. Heavy men are actually in demand. Remember the Sopranos? Tony Soprano was this. Used to get, you know, James Gandolfini used to get all these love letters from women, and as the series progressed, he would get heavier and heavier, and yet he would get more and more, because women liked the fact that he was tall, he was big, he was powerful, but he could get away with being fat. And heavy men are somewhat in demand out there. I'm not talking about really obese men, but I'm just saying, you know, guys who are portly, guys who are, they can almost be obese. And I remember talking to guys, and what's interesting, we get a lot of our dating patterns from high school. And a lot of heavy men, if they were pudgy in high school, had trouble getting dates. I mean, no one would want to go out with them, so they have this low self-esteem. But that same guy, so instead of dating a lot in high school, he would study hard and join the computer club or the science club. And now he's 30 years old and he owns 3 computer companies, or he's, you know, invented new uses for DNA or whatever, or he's a doctor or a dentist or something. And he's heavy and he thinks women won't like him. But the fact of the matter is his dating quotient is really high. And I used to talk to, you know, heavy set guys, and I tell them that as long as they don't want really thin women, you know, as long as a guy can be 300 pounds, if he'll go out with a woman that's 10, 20, 30 pounds overweight, he is in demand out there. So there's a real double standard in our society these days. And it seems to get worse and worse as time goes by, because again, radio, television and the movies and commercials constantly are just showing slender women married to heavy guys.
Interesting.
Now, I'll give you a double standard in the other direction, because
okay.
women love to say that men are shallow, and in terms of appearance, a lot of men are. But there's one way that women are shallow, and this is something that has always driven me crazy, and that's when it comes to height.
Mm.
Okay. short men are in trouble. Women do not like short men. And I have talked to, you know, I've written articles about that and gotten more response from those articles than any other ones from short guys saying, you're absolutely right, I keep getting rejected. And a heavy woman can lose weight. Someone, let's say, who's a cigarette smoker can quit smoking, but a short guy cannot grow. And I've talked to so many studies there have actually studies that show that even short women want tall men. In fact, sometimes the shorter a woman is, the taller a man she wants. Because when I talk to short women, a woman 5'2" says, I want a guy over 6 feet. She'll say, well, I want to feel safe. I won't feel safe with a short man. Or I want to have children. I don't want to have short children. Throughout the animal kingdom, you know, the taller giraffes always were, it's easier for them to find mates than the shorter giraffes. And a lot of women will say men are superficial because all they care about is weight, but those same women will reject men for being, you know, an inch too short or 2 inches too short. And the 60 Minutes did an interesting piece about this a couple of years ago. They had single women looking at sort of a lineup of single men, and they told the women what each man did for a living. Mm-hmm. And even though, like, they would have a short guy who was like 5'4", who they'd say was a very successful lawyer or doctor, which makes a really good income. And then they'd have a guy 6'2", who made a very mediocre income, he was a plumber or something. And then when they would ask that, not that there's anything wrong with plumbers, but they would ask the women, okay, which one of these guys do you want to go out with? They wouldn't pick the 5'4 doctor or the 5'4 lawyer. They would always pick the taller guy. So, not even consciously realize why they were picking him. So there is a problem that short men have, and it does lower their dating quotient. Wow. A short woman, on the other hand, can raise her dating quotient if she would go out with short men, you know, because the short men, you know, want shorter women, obviously. When I would interview a woman who at lunch dates, when she would come in who was 5 feet, 5'1", if she would say, I only want men over 5'10", I would tell her she's going to be very hard to match up. If that same woman would say, yeah, I'll go out with guys 5'3", 5'4", 5'5", 5'6", inevitably she would be easy to match up. And you know what? We had a whole file of couples who got married. And when I looked through those files of couples who got married, so many were the 5'1", 5'2" women who would go out with short men would then be happily married. And the 5'1", 5'2" women who said, I only want to meet guys 5'10 or 6 feet, they would be single. Their membership would have expired. They would have said they didn't like lunch dates. And it's because they were just overly picky about that height thing. And getting back to what I was talking, you know, before about the whole kids thing, a lot of women wake up too late and they go through their 20s always just chasing after taller men, and now they're in their 30s and they want to have kids and they realize, gee, maybe they should be a little more flexible on the height issue.
Now I'm asking you a very sensitive issue, and I'm going to see how you respond. But since you talked to over 10,000 to 15,000 single men, single women, I'm assuming not all of them were Caucasian.
Mm-mm.
On my show, one of the things I've talked about quite frequently, I would venture to say that more than any other ethnicity, there seems to be major tension and animosity between black men and black women. Have you gotten any particular feedback from conversations with black women and or black men that is, say, distinctively different from, say, Caucasian men and women or Asian men and
women?
Well,
the black women who would join lunch dates always tended, not always, but almost always, wanted to meet black men. Mm-hmm. The black men who would join lunch dates tended not to want to meet black women.
Interesting.
Okay. And they would say, I don't have to pay a dating service to meet a black woman. Okay. But if I'm paying you, now I'm paying you because I want to meet white women or Caucasian women. Okay. And that was, and if a black man came in and said, I wanted to meet a black woman, he would do really great. I mean, and he inevitably would meet somebody, because we had a lot of black women who really wanted black men. The interesting thing, if you talk about dating quotient, though, and you go by race, the hardest, the men least in demand were not the black men. You know what they were?
What?
Indian men.
Really?
And then came Asian men, and I'll tell you why. First of all, we would get a lot of Indian men in lunch dates because they really have trouble meeting women. We got very few. I mean, in 23 years, we had only a handful of Indian women. I don't know if they let them out of India or what, but we would not get many Indian women.
Wow.
And we would get a lot of Indian men, and there's a real prejudice against Indian men. A lot of women feel, rightly or wrongly, that Indian men tend to be sexist. And I think the guys who did grow up in India tend to be sexist, wanting much younger women, wanting very attractive women, et cetera. So Indian men were the hardest to match up. Asian men were hard to match up, and Asian women were the absolute easiest to match up of any race or ethnic group. Because men have this stereotype image that Asian women are sweet and, you know, they'll give you a foot massage and that they're submissive and that they're, and they, also Asian women tend to be slender. And so many guys, again, they would get this image from watching, you know, the movies and television, and they would come in and say, I want to meet Asian women who would be really in demand. Now, the Asian women that we would get at lunch dates would be so far from the stereotype, it's ridiculous, because we would get Asian women, you know, who have PhDs from Harvard and go out of their way to not be that sweet, submissive stereotype. And then the Asian women who would come in would, for some reason, talk about women who want much taller men. Asian women would come in and say, I don't want to meet short men. And since many Asian men tend to be shorter, they would say, I don't want to meet Asian men unless they're over 6 feet tall. And there aren't that many Asian men over 6 feet tall. So we had a lot of trouble matching up Indian men first, Asian men second. And we had a lot of trouble and no trouble matching up Asian women. I mean, again, an Asian woman would join and she'd be in real demand by men of all races, black or white or Asian or Indian. Asian women would have the highest dating quotient.
Huh. That's very interesting.
I hadn't thought about that, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man, that is too much. Now, how does things like extracurricular activities, or I should say vices such as smoking's
the number. Yeah.
Doing drugs, how can that hurt your...
Well, obviously, well, I'll start off with smoking. Smoking is the number one thing that, you know, I saw a difference between when I started lunch dates in 1982 and when I left lunch dates in 2005. In 1982, we would get some smokers in, and we started by 1990 discouraging them from joining because nobody wanted to meet them. Smoking is the number one thing, but at least someone can quit smoking. You know, as I said before, a guy can't grow, a woman can lose weight, but anybody smoking can quit smoking. And I always say the number one thing that anybody can do to raise their dating quotient, if they are a smoker, is to quit smoking. I mean, that's an absolute. It's funny, I spoke in front of a class it was a middle school in Newton, Massachusetts, and it was a health education class. And I walked in there and said, I own a dating service. And everyone kind of laughed. And I said, okay, now when I match up adults, what do you think is the most difficult person to match up? And they would say, you know, looking at it from their perspective, they would say, well, someone who's unpopular or someone who's ugly. And I'd say, no, it's anybody who smokes cigarettes. And as I was walking to the school that day, I noted a bunch of kids outside smoking cigarettes, you know, that because kids 13, 14, 15, that's when they experiment and they think it's cool. So anybody who smoked, and I had the teacher write me a note, a letter after I spoke, saying that I had kids had gone up to him and I had a bigger impact in getting kids to say they're going to not smoke than having somebody from, you know, the American Heart Association or the Cancer Society saying, you know, if you smoke, you're going to get cancer in 20 or 30 or 40 years. But if you say to kids, you're not going to find it, be able to get a date when you're in your 20s, that influences them more. So smoking is the number one thing. Obviously, nobody wants to be with an alcoholic. A lot of women, a lot of divorced women in their 40s and 50s, when I'd say, what happened? You want to tell me about your marriage, why you got divorced? A lot of women talked about, their husbands were, you know, started off being, when they met them in their 20s, they were fun guys and they were party drinkers, et cetera. But now they're, you know, by the time they were in their 40s or 50s, their husbands had become alcoholics, and that's why they split up. Now, one of the things over the years that I saw an increase of, women are catching up to men in every field, and I started to see men saying they got divorced because their wives were alcoholics. You know, women are catching up to men in all those fields. And, you know, the same thing with drugs. Someone who's a, you know, heavy drug user, obviously is becomes very difficult to match. But we didn't get into it that much because I didn't really ask people if they did drugs because, you know, it's illegal even to smoke pot. It's illegal, so I couldn't really ask somebody, you know, do you do something illegal, because I'm sure they wouldn't give me an honest answer. But smoking and drinking habits were certainly something that was very important. And if a woman, you know, a lot of women came in and said, look, my husband was an alcoholic, and I would not prefer to meet someone who's, you know, a very light drinker at most. And, of course, if somebody said they didn't drink at all, that means they probably were an alcoholic who didn't drink.
Mm-hmm. Now, is religion, is that seem to be something that's real important for couples, like, say, number one, meet someone of their same religion, or did you have people of different religions, or even people who were atheists or agnostic hooking up with each other?
Right. Well, yeah, religion tends to be more important to women than to men. A lot of women who say, you know, I'm a devout Catholic or devout Protestant or devout Jewish, they would say, you know, I want to meet somebody who has the same religion. And often, you know, very few men would come in and say, I'm devoutly Jewish and I want somebody Jewish, or I'm devoutly Catholic and I want something Catholic. Most men really didn't care. So I often said to women, look, I'm not going to just match you. I can't just match you with someone who says they're a devout Catholic, but I'll match you with somebody who said they were raised Catholic maybe, and then once you hook them and once you marry them, you can talk them into going to church. Because really most single men could care less, and then once they get married or have kids, then they'll go back to the religion perhaps they were raised. But again, over time, the difference between the early 80s and the mid-2000s was I saw religion being less and less of an issue. I saw more and more people saying that they were more spiritual, that they were non-practicing, you know, that they were raised Catholic, but now they were non-practicing, or more and more people saying they were spiritual. And certainly in 1982, we would match people up more by religion, but by 2005, we would match people less up by religion. And I started seeing, by 2005, I started seeing the children of religious and racial mixed marriages from the 70s. You know, if somebody got married in 1970, a baby boomer, and they had kids, by 2005, those kids were 30. And those were I saw more interracial men and women and more interreligious men and women who really didn't care that much about religion. So both race and religion became less of a factor as time went on. And I must say, by the way, that some of the people I met who were like had a Jewish parent and a Christian parent, or, you know, Catholic, tended to be great people because they tended to get the best of both religions. But the day of, you know, people who are Protestant only wanting Protestant people or something like that, or Catholics only wanting Catholics, that's definitely begun to wane. I think religion has become less important, or at least marrying somebody of the same religion has become less important. What is, and what has been replaced? It's been replaced by wanting something who works out, who keeps in shape, who is healthy and fit, and therefore a non-smoker. I see much more of that in the 2000s than I did in the early 1980s.
Wow, this has been very before I start wrapping it up, what is the Valentine's Day test?
Oh, the Valentine's. Just that, especially for women, what a guy, I mean, men don't care at all what they get for Valentine's Day, but for women, it's really, who are just starting a relationship or at some point in a relationship, they look at Valentine's Day, it's very important to them that the man pass the test, the man give them a card or flowers or a meaningful present that they thought about, because women will really pay attention to that. You know, all guys know if you forget Valentine's Day or if you forget the woman's birthday or forget your anniversary, all of those things are tests that women are testing the relationship, whether the guy really cares about them. And again, just like relationship in general, those things mean much more to women than they do to men. So, you know, the guy who, even if he's only been dating a woman for a few weeks, Valentine's Day rolls around, she's going to expect a card or flowers or something. And if he just doesn't even think about it or forgets about it, he's in trouble. And if he's someone who's married, forget it. If he forgets her birthday or for Valentine's Day, then he's in trouble.
Huh. Well, Steve, I got to tell you, man, this has been one of the most enjoyable conversations I've had, one of the most enlightening conversations I've had. I can say it. I've interviewed quite a few book authors, relationship experts. You're in the creme de la creme category.
Well, thank you.
You really know your stuff.
But my book, it is called The Truth About Dating Revealed. It's available, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, some bookstores. They can also, I have a website, thetruthaboutdating.com. They could order it through me. If they want an autographed copy. And I also do, coach singles, especially these days. I'm coaching a lot of singles who are doing internet dating, Match.com or eHarmony.com, and I'm doing a lot of coaching of those singles. And I am available. Just contact me again through thetruthaboutdating.com.
Uh-huh. Okay, listeners.
There's my plug.
Please plug.
And I coach people. I mean, in person in around New England, but I've coached people over the internet from all over the country. So if anybody's interested, my rates are pretty reasonable compared to some dating coaches who charge ridiculous rates, frankly.
All right, listeners, you heard it. TheTruthAboutDating.com. TheTruthAboutDating.com. Again, his book is entitled The Truth About Dating Revealed, How to Realize and Raise Your Dating Quotient. Steve Penner, it has been a true pleasure. Listeners, join me next week as I celebrate my 3-year anniversary on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network. I'll just kind of have an open discussion, invite past guests to call in, my listeners to call in, share your thoughts about the episodes of the last year, and just going to have a relaxing good time next week. And then the week after, going to have Alexis K. Tyler. So until then, have a safe and enjoyable weekend. I'll see you next Thursday. Take care and always be upfront and straightforward.